WKJAN, Radio Atlantic.
At 8 o'clock, it's partly sunny and 40 degrees in Atlantic. We look forward to be mostly sunny and windy today with a high of 47. Good morning, I'm Rick Hansen with KJAN News. U.S. Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack has announced that the USDA is providing more than $352 million in loans and grants to upgrade rural water and wastewater systems nationwide. The projects funded will not only help to ensure rural places have access to clean water, but will also create jobs and help communities retain and attract new businesses and families. In Iowa, the Southern Iowa Rural Water Association, or SURWA, is receiving $5.699 million in loan and $4.371 million in grant funds to help make improvements to existing distribution piping across the organization's service area, as well as installation of a new elevated storage tank, booster pump station, appurtenances, and three emergency generators. The funding will benefit approximately 6,925 existing rural customers in Adair, Adams, Cass, Clark, Decatur, Madison, Ringgold, Taylor, and Union counties. Vilsack said, "These investments are critical for our health and safety, and in the long term for sustainable economic development. Investments like these in the nation's water infrastructure are also critical to address the impact of climate change on our water supplies." He went on to say the projects supported with these resources will ensure rural families have access to clean water and create jobs in communities across the country. Residents in the Kimbleton and Elkhorn areas should be aware of a road closure that will begin Monday, November 10th. Shelby County Emergency Management Agency officials say Woodland Road between 1000th and 1100th Streets will be closed for about a week effective Monday. The road is being closed for repairs. The affected area lies between Jackson Township, sections 14 and 15, one quarter of a mile north of 1000th Street, in a small tributary of Wolf Creek. Emergency responders should plan to take alternate routes to nearby residences. If you have any questions, you can contact the Shelby County Engineer's Office at 712-755-5954. Three people were arrested on drug charges Thursday in Creston. Creston police announced on Friday 31-year-old Adrian Jacquez of Creston was arrested at around 4:45 p.m. on two Union County warrants for failure to appear on original charges of possession of a controlled substance, domestic abuse assault by impeding air and or blood flow resulting in bodily injury, and willful injury. Jacquez, who was also charged with interference with official acts, was being held in the Union County Jail on $30,300 bond. And at around 9:45 p.m. Thursday, 26-year-old Margaret Williams of Afton and 25-year-old Brandon Parker of Davenport were arrested in Creston. Both were taken into custody of the 600 block of Wyoming Street. Williams was charged with OWI first offense, possession with the intent to sell methamphetamine, and possession of a controlled substance, Xanax. She was being held in the Ringgold County Jail on $100,000 bond. Brandon Parker was charged with being a felon in possession of a firearm, theft in the third degree, possession of meth, providing false identification information, possession of a concealed weapon, and possession of drug paraphernalia. He was being held also on two warrants out of Polk County for robbery in the first degree, and he was being held in the Ringgold County Jail on $5,000 bond. A man from Adair County and another from Union County were arrested Thursday in Creston for probation violations. 32-year-old John Robert Lemon of Greenfield was wanted on a Polk County warrant, and he was being held without bond until he could be turned over to Polk County authorities. And 20-year-old Timothy Allen Culpepper of Creston was arrested for probation violation and for being in the presence of a minor child. He was being held in the Union County Jail on $5,000 bond. The U.S. Attorney's Office for the Southern District of Iowa reports 43-year-old Corey Allen Brooks of Omaha was arrested Wednesday in Pottawatomie County, or sentenced Wednesday in Pottawatomie County, to 30 years in prison for conspiracy to distribute methamphetamine and a consecutive 10 years for possession of a firearm during the conspiracy to distribute methamphetamine. Brooks's term of imprisonment is to be followed by 10 years of supervised release. The charges resulted from a lengthy investigation into drug trafficking by Brooks in Nebraska and Iowa. It was determined through the investigation that Brooks arranged for large quantities of methamphetamine, about 30 kilograms in fact, to be delivered in Omaha and Council Bluffs between March and September of 2011. During the course of the conspiracy, Brooks carried a firearm to protect the interference of operation from interference with outside parties. On January 6th of this year, Brooks pled guilty to both charges. Additional members of a drug trafficking organization run by Brooks that have also been sentenced include Cliff Ellis, who was sentenced on February 15th of 2013 to 175 months in prison for conspiracy to distribute methamphetamine and a consecutive 60 months in prison for possession of a firearm during conspiracy, followed by 5 years of supervised release. Cody Maves, who was sentenced on March 15th of this year to 80 months in prison, followed by 5 years of supervised release for conspiracy to distribute meth. Jason Hannon, who was sentenced on March 25th to 120 months in prison for conspiracy to distribute meth and 120 months consecutively in prison for possession of a firearm during the conspiracy. Roy Gage, sentenced on March the 25th to 100 months in prison for conspiracy to distribute meth and a consecutive 60 months in prison for possession of a firearm during the conspiracy. James Serber, who was sentenced March 25th also to 60 months in prison for conspiracy to distribute meth. Anthony Good was sentenced on May the 29th to 140 months in prison for conspiracy to distribute meth and a consecutive 120 months for possession of a firearm. And Chris Tights, who was sentenced on July the 1st to 188 months in prison for conspiracy to distribute meth, followed by a 5-year supervised release. The investigation was conducted by the Southwest Iowa Narcotics Task Force, Mills County Sheriff's Office, Council Bluffs Police Department, Omaha Police, the Iowa Division of Narcotics Enforcement, and the U.S. Secret Service. The case was prosecuted by the U.S. Attorney's Office for the Southern District of Iowa. An Iowa judge has upheld actions of the state's Gaming Commission over its decision to issue a casino license last year to a new developer in Sioux City. Polk County District Court Judge Eliza Overham's ruling on Friday upholds actions by the Iowa Racing and Gaming Commission that led to a Hard Rock-themed casino and hotel. The Bell of Sioux City operators of the former Argosy Sioux City Riverboat Casino had sued to force the commission to reinstate its license and rescind the new one to the Hard Rock developer. The Sioux City Journal reports Overham dismissed claims the commission's actions were unreasonable and had violated state law, among other arguments. Bell of Sioux City is a subsidiary of Penn National Gaming. The American Civil Liberties Union is challenging Iowa's tough policies that bar felons from voting. A lawsuit filed Friday seeks to restore voting rights to thousands of former offenders before the 2016 presidential election. It also seeks to end confusion over the rules for ex-felons that followed a 2011 policy change by Governor Branstad. Iowa is one of three states where felons cannot vote after completing their sentence until their rights are restored by the governor. ACLU attorney Rita Bettis said the widespread denial of voting rights based on felony convictions, quote, is the single biggest denial of civil rights in Iowa. She says it disenfranchises thousands of people and wants a court to limit the number of felony offenses that trigger the loss of voting rights. Iowa's largest state employee union is set to offer an initial contract proposal to Governor Terry Branstad. Iowa Council 61 of the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, or AFSCME, will make the proposal on Monday. The union, which represents about 20,000 state workers, is covered by the current contract through the end of June. Union President Danny Homan declined to say what was in the proposal. The state will release its proposal November 24th, and negotiations start early next year. The current 2-year contract included no raises but maintained benefit plans, for which most members pay no monthly contribution. Governor Branstad says providing more funding to fix Iowa's crumbling roads is a top priority and that he is keeping an open mind to all options, including raising the state's fuel tax. Branstad said in an interview Thursday that he wants to get input from lawmakers in advance of the next legislative session with hopes of reaching a bipartisan consensus. Branstad didn't back any specific plan. The legislature has failed to find compromise on the issue over recent years. The Republican governor, who just won re-election to a 6th non-consecutive term, said the timing was good to start this conversation because gas prices have dropped significantly. Branstad stressed he would like to find a new funding approach that is not just the old gas tax. Three of Iowa's top Republicans met by phone Friday morning to talk about the future of the Iowa Straw Poll, an event in Ames that has been both a party fundraiser and provided a snapshot of the presidential candidates' organization in Iowa in the summer before the Iowa caucuses. Iowa GOP Chairman Jeff Kaufman.
We are keeping our options open on where the straw poll might occur and what the straw poll may look like. There will be some kind of event in the summer of 2015.
In December or January, a meeting will be set up so Kaufman and other top party officials can meet with Governor Branstad, Congressman King, Senator-elect Joni Ernst, and Congressman-elect Rod Blum and David Young to come up with a list of options for the event. A final decision will be made by the party's State Central Committee.
You know, I can't even say for sure it will be called a straw poll. We're going to figure out together so we have a unified agreement across the board on what this should look like. and how we should conduct it.
Kaufman says making sure the event gets the blessing of the Republican National Committee is also key, since national party leaders have carved out an exception so Iowa's precinct caucuses can remain the first event on the presidential campaign calendar.
We want to make sure that whatever event we have is nothing like our caucus and doesn't take the place of any kind of a caucus, nor should we get two bites of the apple.
Critics of the straw poll have complained it gives Iowa two first events in the presidential selection process, as candidates like Tim Pawlenty and Elizabeth Dole, who have failed to place well in straw polls of the past, have ended their campaigns right after the straw poll. Straw poll defenders have argued it's a way for candidates to do a test run for the caucuses, plus it's a way for the Iowa GOP to raise money. Kaufman says the fundraiser aspect is a misnomer.
You know, a long time ago, a decade ago, it was a fundraiser. Expenses have increased dramatically. And to be honest with you, Kay, we have to look at our dollars and cents in terms of our expenditures here, because we certainly cannot lose money on an event like that. And it's not as lucrative as anyone thinks.
Kaufman says for him, the value of the event is the energy and enthusiasm it generates among Republicans for the campaign season ahead. He talked about the future of the straw poll with Governor Terry Branstad and Congressman Steve King, along with Radio Iowa's O.K. Henderson. Taking a look at our funeral announcements this morning, Carrie B. Williams, age 96 of Corning, died Monday at Bergen Mercy Hospital in Omaha. Funeral services for Carrie Williams will be today at 10:30 at the United Methodist Church in Corning. Pearson Family Funeral Service in Corning is in charge of the arrangements. Doris D. Getch, age 80, formerly of Carson, died November the 5th in Brookings, South Dakota. Graveside services for D. Getch will be today at 2:30 at the Carson Cemetery in Carson. Dune Funeral Home of Griswold is in charge of the arrangements. Randy Stewart Booth, age 57, of Westphalia, died Tuesday at Murtu Medical Center in Harlan. Funeral services for Randy Booth will be on Sunday at 2 o'clock at the Pauly Jones Funeral Home in Harlan. Rena Fega, age 100, of Atlantic and formerly of Adair, died Thursday at the Heritage House in Atlantic. Funeral services for Rena Fega will be on Monday at 10:30 at the Emmanuel Lutheran Church in Adair. Hockenberry Family Care of Atlantic has the arrangements. Dwayne Harris, age 75, of Greenfield, died Wednesday. Funeral services for Dwayne Harris will be on Monday at 10:30 at Emmanuel Lutheran Church in Greenfield. Steen Funeral Home in Greenfield has arrangements. Daryl Wagner, age 88, of Atlantic, died Thursday at the Heritage House. Funeral services for Daryl Wagner will be on Tuesday at 10:30 at the Roland Funeral Service in Atlantic. And Jim McCumber, age 80, of Manila, died Wednesday as the result of an accident north of Dunlap. Services for Jim McCumber are pending at the Odie Funeral Home in Manila. That is a check of our news and funeral announcements here on KJAN. I'm Rick Hansen reporting.